News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 watt 1180 WHAM.
Yes, officer, it seems my husband's been abducted. The man was wearing a blue leisure suit, and the plates were from Kansas. He was a huge, beastly, bulging man.
What? What the heck are you on? Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 2nd of December, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're here just in time to witness the complete breakdown of a producer. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
I don't know.
The movie was on last night.
Was it on last night, too?
Yeah.
Well, I've got a tradition of actually watching it every year. That gets me in. It's a hilarious movie. It really is.
At 8 minutes after the hour, you're listening to a Christmas. You're listening to sound bites.
What movie is he talking about?
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Of course.
I can't stand Chevy Chase.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No. Wow. He's right up there. Who's the other one? He did The Phone Book Is Here. The Phone Book Is Here.
Steve Martin.
Yes.
Oh.
There's limited ones that I can tolerate him.
So you don't like Caddyshack either.
Caddyshack, yes, I do that.
Don't you go mocking the classics. Bill Murray, I can completely do without, but everybody else in that movie, funny.
Yes.
We watched Funny Farm last week to get ready for Christmas Vacation.
Chevy Chase was just on something. Oh, he was on. He did. I was flipping channels one night, and there was Chevy Chase, only he looked old. But he was doing the news on Saturday Night Live. He was the guest.
He was the guest.
And he did the news. I thought that was so cool.
And he is old.
And then the other, whoever their current puppy is who does the news, says, ladies and gentlemen, Chevy Chase, the whole audience stood up and applauded. All right, there seems to be a defect, this story thanks to Chris, in the screens of certain iMacs. More and more users are reporting an issue where weird pink lines appear on the LCD and get progressively worse as time goes on. It starts as one pink line. Then a couple of weeks later, another couple of lines appear. Every now and then you start it up. They're gone, but seem to fade in after about 5 minutes. Sadly for these owners, the issue seems to start just after the one-year warranty expires. Some of the affected users have started an online petition. It reads, we, the undersigned, request that Apple Inc. officially acknowledge and address the defect in their LCD displays. The defect causes vertical lines, cyan, yellow, pink, to appear, cutting through the screen and multiplying as time goes by, unfortunately. The problem starts to appear right after the end of the one-year warranty. This problem has been filling up the Apple's online discussion forums with no possible solution. We are the loyal Apple fans and would love to see Apple show its appreciation by stepping up to this issue. Customers with this issue, consultant and Apple rep, are being quoted prices of more than $700 to fix it. If this happens to you, the first thing you should check is to see if you have an extended warranty or if the credit card you use to purchase the computer has extended warranty protection.
The big question is whether it's the LCD failing or it's the logic board failing, you know, logic board putting out the video signal.
Right.
And either of those parts are both very expensive.
Right. But if it's an endemic problem, then Apple should fix it.
They probably will. They released a firmware update for newer model iMacs that were having video problems.
Right.
It takes a while to figure out whether it's an isolated case. A lot of times you read about things in forums and, you know, there's dozens of people or hundreds of people having the problem. Well, there's tens of millions of computers, so 100 people having the problem isn't a problem.
Right. What looks to us like a huge amount of problem is really statistically insignificant.
Yeah, I was told when I bought my Mac in February of 06 from Mac Ave, actually, here in the city. They've now closed that store. But they told me at the time that pretty much iMac repairs are very expensive, and I was wise to pick up the service, what do they call it, the Apple Service Care Plan, Apple Care, and I universally recommend that to all purchasers of Macs now.
There you go.
extended warranties have always been those catch-22s. You kind of hope something breaks to justify paying for the extended warranty. But in most cases, the extended warranties aren't that much. And in Apple's case, they give you a lot more than just extending your warranty. You get more telephone support from Apple. And there's unconfirmed stories that you get better treatment from the Apple Care reps.
Yeah,
you bought the extended warranty. They'll maybe be a little more lenient about problems.
Right. And of course, we've always recommended picking up the extra warranty on laptops. Never buy a laptop without the extra warranty.
And that's one of the similar issues with the iMac is that the laptops are small, custom built boards, proprietary systems on any computer, not just Apple. So that if anything goes wrong, it's going to be really expensive to fix.
Right.
Yeah, but the hard drive is the only standard part in a laptop.
Right. That's true these days. All right, our first caller.
Well, we should say that the online petition has 86 signatures.
86? Wow.
Steve Jobs must be quaking.
86? That's almost 90. Our first caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Good morning. I purchased just some ink cartridges for a Canon printer, an inkjet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they obviously were refills, and I'm getting an error message. The system is recognizing that it's not a brand new original one, and it's not letting me print with it. And the question is, A, will I be able to call someone? You know, it's just it's a $100 printer, so will I be able to call someone to get it fixed, or does this mean simply that I have to buy a brand new out of the box that says an original Canon cartridge?
Yeah, fixed is an interesting term in this case. Canon doesn't believe anything's broken, so there's nothing to fix.
Right.
They do this on purpose.
And pretty much every printer company does it.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's they claim, putting our company hats on for a minute, they claim it so they can monitor ink usage and better inform you about when your ink is about to go out. So when the ink tank is empty, there's a chip in the cartridge that says I'm empty. So when you put more ink into it, it doesn't matter. The chip says it's empty.
The cartridges that you've got replaced might have a defective chip in them. So I would take the cartridges back and tell wherever you got them from
that
you need those replaced.
Yeah.
Because the chips aren't properly reporting to the printer that these are brand new cartridges.
Well, if they're third-party cartridges, they don't have chips in them.
They may. There was a big lawsuit 2 or 3 years ago. I think they picked on Lexmark first, but went after all the printer companies.
That
it's a violation of the digital. I can't even say it. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act to reverse engineer around copy protection. So a company had made a compatible cartridge that had a Lexmark compatible chip in it, and so Lexmark sued them. And one, because the DMCA is a stupid law. But and so the printer companies have been fairly successful in stopping cloned cartridges or cloned chips from being distributed.
So the short of it is, John, you cannot fix it. You're going to have to buy real Canon ink.
Okay.
And if the person you bought it from, the company you bought it from, has guaranteed compatibility on it, you can make them replace it with real compatible cartridges.
First.
Well, but I'm guessing what's going to happen, unless they have original brand new, they're going to send me another one refilled. Since they have been able to more or less reset the cartridge, I'm going to have the same system where the cartridge is saying it's empty, right?
No, not necessarily. If they're properly, the chips are working correctly, you might have gotten a set that has a bad set of chips in it. It happens.
Yeah,
since they are refills, it could have gotten damaged in refilling. Send them, call the company up, tell them you're sending them back. You know, worst you're going to be is maybe a few bucks, a couple bucks in postage, mailing them back to have them send you back another
set. Yeah, but
set.
A lot of them, once the cartridge is empty, it trips the chip, and you can't, even if you
refill
them. Right,
that's why the refilling company has to reset the chip.
Right. And if they didn't, that's where the problem lies.
And there's a huge, scam is probably too hard a word, in inkjet cartridges. Consumer Reports did a big article on it a few months ago about house brand ink cartridges, and you go to the big office supply stores and you buy off-brand cartridges because they're cheaper. They have less ink in them. That's why they're cheaper. So a lot of times you have to look at the capacity of the cartridge and see if it actually is worth. It might look like it's $5 cheaper, but if there's half the ink in it, it's actually costing more in the long run. you're usually better off, and Consumer Reports pretty much determine this too, you're usually better off buying the name brand cartridges. And a lot of times it's because that ink is chemically formulated for the mechanism in the printer.
Right. It used to be like with the cartridge for the ribbon.
Yeah, your old printer ribbons.
Right.
You could re-ink them.
You could re-ink them.
I had a hand-cranked one.
Yeah, yes, so did I. But you had to re-ink them with ink that included a little bit of WD-40 in the right proportion to lubricate the printhead. Yep. Same idea here. If it's not quite the right ink, it can clog up the...
And that's why we strongly recommend a laser printer for regular black and white printing, because the consumable cost is much lower in the end.
Yep.
And then get a color photo printer for the photos you want to do.
Yeah, for the... every day. Yeah.
And even now, color laser printers are $300, so they're coming down dramatically.
Yeah, but the toner and everything else.
Well, generally with liquid ink printers, you get the best photographs because of the way the liquid ink works. But you're looking at 30 to 40 cents per color per page. With laser, you're looking at 2 to 3 cents per color per page. So it's significantly cheaper for laser.
The cartridge itself is more expensive, but it lasts so much longer. Yeah.
And then the other half of the inkjet printer joke is that, as the caller said, his printer's $100. If you go out and buy name brand cartridges, color and black and white, it's probably $100.
Yeah.
You might as well buy a new printer.
Well, and by the time you've put in three sets of cartridges, you might as well have bought a laser printer.
Right. And then you get the next better printer by the money you would have spent on the cartridges.
Right.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. And who is it? Gillette. It's the old Bic razor analogy. You give them the razor and you sell them the blades.
Yeah. Right. And that's the main reason that inkjet printers are so cheap, because the consumables are so expensive.
That's why, somebody worked out the math. Well, it can't be a very good printer. I said, no, they're not making the money on the printer.
Right. The printer you're getting basically costs $100 worth of printers, a lot of printers.
Right. Someone worked out the math. Typical inkjet tank is like 0.05 ounce or some ridiculously tiny amount of ink.
Right.
You work out the math and it's $3,000 or $4,000 a gallon.
Right.
Yeah. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
I would way rather pay for gas than if your cars ran on inkjet printer cartridges, you'd be in trouble. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, who has found the weirdest stuff in the machine today. I'm sure we're going to get more of that. Me, Nick Francesco, it's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. The San Jose Mercury News has reported on the discovery by a pair of security researchers that it may be possible to steal Second Life users in world currency. This would be a big problem, of course, because the currency, known as Linden dollars, are directly convertible to U.S. dollars. Hackers Charles Miller and Dino Dizovi said that they have uncovered an exploit that could allow someone to flee Second Life residents of their Linden dollars. The exploit is related to Apple's QuickTime software, which is used to display videos in Second Life. The exploit works because Second Life allows users to embed videos or pictures on their characters or their virtual property. When someone comes nearby and is within view of the object, the Second Life software activates QuickTime so it can play the video or picture. In doing so, QuickTime directs the Second Life software to a website. By exploiting the flaw in QuickTime, the hackers can direct the Second Life software to a malicious website that then allows them to take over the Second Life avatar. The end result of that could be that a malicious hacker could then strip the avatar of any Linden dollar holdings. As of yesterday, Apple had not released a fix for it. A Linden lab said it wasn't aware of anyone actually using the exploit to rob anyone. For residents of Second Life, then, solution may be to avoid holding on to large numbers of Linden dollars. You can't lose what's not there.
So don't carry large wads of cash in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
In the real world or the Second Life.
Or Second Life. Your first life, if you have one, or Second Life.
There have been some cases that just saw...
How about get a life?
Yeah. Well, there were some cases on they were talking about on G4 Tech TV where someone was arrested in the real world for stealing furniture in Second Life. Mm-hmm. Again, because it's directly convertible to real money, it's in a sense tangible property.
Right, right. Steve had an interesting point about the ink cartridge thing.
Oh yeah, we were looking up some of the case history, and it is not a violation of the DMCA to reverse engineer the chip in your ink cartridge. So the Arizona Remanufactured Cartridge Association, which brought the original lawsuit, won that suit. So it is legal to use third party chips in your printer. However, the court also ruled that the end user license agreement that is on the usually on the outside of the box of the printer is binding and enforceable. And if it says on the box, you agree by opening the box to not use third party cartridges, then you violated that contract.
How many of them actually do though?
Right.
Right, yeah. So, and well, is anyone going to find you and arrest you?
Well, the big thing is they've ruled, I believe, I'm not a lawyer, I don't even play one on television anymore. I believe they ruled the end user license agreements that's inside the box that you can't get to until right. you open it is illegal or is not binding.
Yeah.
But if it's on the outside where you can read it before you open it, then it's binding.
Right. Now, the ones that come inside the box usually say something about if you don't agree to these terms, seal the box and return. Well, they close the box and return it to your place of right. purchase. But you can always say that you never saw that.
Right. Right. All right. Our next caller is Don from Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Yes, sir. Happy holidays to you.
And the same to you.
I have Windows 98 SE with a Norton 2003 version of antivirus.
Yep.
I've been trying to do the updates or downloads on it.
You're not going to be able to.
Well, I just paid them for it. I better be they took my money.
Well.
And they're saying that it won't. It goes through everything, except there's two virus definition downloads. It does one, and it says the other one it can't do because of L-U-O. Are you familiar with that phrase or what that might mean? Is that a virus?
L-U-O?
L-U-O.
The live update online?
No idea, but that's what yeah, that's what
it's the name of an African tribe in Kenya and Tanzania.
Yeah, you're right. I did the Google thing, yeah. Too. It's got something with Wikipedia and...
yeah, the Wikipedia Google entry talking about the African groups. It's probably something related to live update, which yeah. is how semantics programs talk to Symantec to download the updates.
And because you're using old browsers and it's an... You know, an operating system that's been dead for quite a few years. I hate to say it, but you're living on borrowed time.
I realize that part of it, but you don't know what that LUO is for whether that might be a virus or not?
No, I don't think it's a virus. I think it's just having trouble, like Steve was saying, doing one of the updates, and that could be due to some of the other files because it is an older version of Windows.
See, they won't let you do the 206 version because that's not compatible.
That was my other concern, is 2003 is such an old version of Norton, they may not be supporting it anymore.
Well,
and the updates may not work in 2003.
According to them, they do, and they took my money. I just had it reinstalled.
Yeah, but that's some third-party company. Who knows?
They'll always take your money.
Yeah, they'll be glad to take
it. Well, no, it was Symantec. That's who got paid.
Yeah, but like I say, again, usually it's some third-party country that's doing that service for them. They farm that out.
It's usually Digital River does the online purchasing things.
And they, now, but, the yeah. version that you bought, is it the version you're using, or is it an updated version?
It's an updated version. In other words, I just renewed it. It was the same version I had.
Oh, so you just renewed your subscription?
Yes.
Okay, so you didn't get a new version?
No, just renewed what I had working before.
There is a Trojan called deloader.luo, but Symantec calls it w32.sillydc.
Well, probably one of our recommendations.
Has also been acting, you know, it's been kind of slow, and a lot of the other things you guys talk about to look for when a system is unstable or being hacked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might want to run the entire Security Tango and download some of the free antivirus and anti-spyware programs. To see if any of those
help you out.
The anti-spyware, though, does that mean I have to get rid of the Norton in order to put that on?
No.
You don't have to, but you may want to.
You're right. They all run together. Go to the Security Tango, securitytango.com, click on the Let's Dance button, and print that page out and follow the instructions.
I'm looking to see what Grisoff's
Adware, the new Adware work on 98? I'm not sure. The 2007 version?
Yeah, you may have to go back to Adware SE for the older Windows systems.
I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, the problem remains the version of Windows you're still using. I'm sorry, we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, and me. It's 31 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
No, Bethany, those are Christmas lights.
Don't throw me down, Clark.
I'll try not to, Aunt Bethany.
Is this the airport, Clark?
We're here.
The fire is so delightful.
And since we've no
what?
Place to go,
let it snow. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the Soundbites Chorale and Chorus.
I'll sing solo.
Solo, we can't hear you. But I'm bummed. Thank you. Be here all week. Try the veal. All right.
Hey, right. This time I'm honest about it. I can't carry a tune in the bucket.
Well, then, shut up.
Thank you.
Well, we'll sing. You listen.
Do I hear?
Everybody has a talent.
Rob, I'm coming in there with listening. You.
Oh, he is not happy with that now. Microsoft and the DAISY Corporation, this is a great thing, are working together to create a text-to-audio translation plugin for visually impaired users of OpenXML-enabled Microsoft Word documents. Maybe we can get it to read the news. The resulting Save as DAISY Digital Accessible Information System plugin for Microsoft Word will make it possible to convert OpenXML-based documents into DAISY XML, a standard for reading and publishing navigable multimedia content used by individuals who are visually impaired, according to Reed Schaffner, the product manager for Microsoft Office Word and Accessibility. This is a great opportunity for us, even among the disabled community. Office is the primary application used by blind people for word processing. Really? What we can really offer with DAISY is an exponential increase in content, like from academia, and ease of use that they have never had before, he said. The project is being hosted on SourceForge with the first beta code released early next year and released by March 2008, Schaffner said, noting that the plugin will work with all Word documents created with Office XP, Office 2003, and the current Office 2007. Essentially, what will happen is that the plugin will convert an OpenXML file to an intermediate DAISY XML file in the TalkBook format. Customers can then use one of many tools, which are already available, to create a bunch of different accessible outputs, be it in Braille or a really rich audio file that allows them to navigate by heading or page number and navigate tables with much more detail than they would typically be able to. The ability to create DAISY content for millions of OpenXML-based documents using this translator for Microsoft Office Word would benefit publishers, governments, corporations, editors, and most important, everyone who loves to read. While Microsoft would be driving the development of the basic converter, it would be an open process with the company looking for feedback from the community and users from the disabled community as it started to develop beta versions.
Can you say a little too late?
Yeah, it's like there aren't already products
that
do all
of this.
Hello,
the best product out there right now that's been out there since Windows, like, 95, has been JAWS for the disabled, visually impaired.
Right.
I mean, JAWS works fantastic. It works in Internet Explorer, Netscape. I mean, all the browsers in there as far as reading and its spreadsheets and everything else. I mean, this is something that...
Yep.
Forget it. Well, some especially larger companies like to stick with one brand. And so if they can get the Microsoft screen text reader thingy and their Microsoft OS and the Microsoft browser.
Yeah. And what kind of support is it going to be?
Yeah.
Well, like I say, JAWS works fantastic. It's been there for years, and the support is great.
The corporate world is after support from one source, regardless of how good or bad that support may be.
Yeah, but they got to get a product that works. Yeah.
Right.
There's actually a similar story came out about the iPhone. There's been a lot of questions from the beginning about how people with visual impairments are going to be able to use the iPhone because it's so visual. And the basic answer is they're not.
Yeah.
But there were reports that AT&T was offering a $27 a month data-only feature so that the phone half of it didn't work, but the web browsing surfing half of it did. And they withdrew the offer before it was officially available because apparently too many people wanted it.
Oh, how sad for them.
Yeah, which for the blind community seemed kind of opposite, that they'd probably want the phone half of it.
Yeah. Right. AT&T is also offering several states very inexpensive, what they call naked digital, where you can get digital service without having AT&T phone service. It's pretty inexpensive. It's not offered in New York State, but there are a couple of, that's okay, I can't get Fios, doggone it. But it's not offered in New York State. They call it naked DSL because you don't need the attendant phone service. They're making it very hard to get. They're making it very hard to believe you can get it because they hide it on their website, but they are offering it.
Well, I think both Frontier and Roadrunner will give you internet service without the accompanying phone and TV service.
Right.
It just costs more.
Right. And this does too, but they're actually hiding the fact that they offer it. Yeah. I don't know why.
Well, so you package everything together and it costs a lot less.
Yeah. Right. Right. All right. Our next caller is Pat from Arondacoid. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Hi. I have a custom desktop computer.
Yep.
My screen went black, so I took it in. They put a used video card in it because the thing is old. And I brought it home. I hooked everything up, turned it on. It booted up. I tried to open the CD door and the screen went black. I booted up a couple other times and it wouldn't do anything. I took it back. They ran it and it was just fine, played music and everything else. Brought it home, hooked it up, booted up, and instantly the screen went black again. The lights are on in front of the computer.
Were you taking your computer in or the screen in?
The computer.
It may not be the computer.
It's
apparently
screen.
Not the computer if it works fine at the shop. It could
you
be
the
screen.
Monitor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the monitor works fine with my laptop. Matter of fact, I've got it on my laptop right now, and it works great.
With the same cable connecting to your laptop that it does to the desktop?
Yes.
I might look at the video resolution settings in the desktop. Maybe you're running it at 100 hertz, and the monitor can only go to 75 hertz. If you boot the computer into safe mode, you can set a lower resolution and lower frequency on your video.
Do you see anything on your screen when you boot it up?
Well, it'll boot up and look perfect, and mm-hmm. then for a few seconds, and then it just goes black.
Yes.
And now it won't boot up again.
Yeah, that sounds like it's out of frequency. Most of the newer monitors will then put up a message on the screen about bad signal or out of frequency or something like that.
Right. What happens is when a system boots up, it boots up in the lowest common denominator resolution, 640 by 480, 16 colors.
At 60 hertz.
At 60 hertz. Clearly, your monitor can handle that. It's when it tries to do more than that you have a problem. So boot into safe mode, set up your video to do 640 by 480 at 60 hertz, and reboot in regular mode. It'll come up, then you can start messing around with the resolution until it goes black, and then you step it back one. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
Come on, everybody, to Santa Claus's party. You may be sure both rich and poor are welcome at Santa's door.
It's kind of sad to see the entire breakdown of a human being right here in front of you.
Yeah, we're witnessing
it. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm easily amused.
And in 45 minutes after the hour, clearly we all are. Before I go much farther, I have to tell you two things about our chat. We do have an online live chat every Sunday from 11 to 1. It's at efnet.org. Chat.fnet.org. That's EFNET. Chat.fnet.org. Just sign in, give yourself a username and a password, and tell them you want to go to the Octothorpe, or as you say it, #soundbites, SOUNDBYTES. That soundbites with a Y, as Francis would like us to remind you. And the most amusing part of this whole thing is the person currently running the chat area is, you guessed it, Francis. I think that's very, very funny.
Yeah.
Except I think it's Francis with an E. It's Francis was a woman.
Okay. It should be Francis with a Y.
It should be Francis with a Y. And thus, officially, it should be from now on. Francis, I know you're listening. It's time to make that change. That's very funny, Chris.
Thank you.
All right. And they're talking online about a new version of Ubuntu that's out. This is true. Ubuntu ME.
It's okay. It's better than Vista.
Well, it's actually Muslim edition. You just look at the
Wouldn't anything. That be MU?
Muslim addition.
Okay.
Hello?
Not audition.
Stop.
Muslim, M-U.
No, never mind. All right. Hackers, by the way, will be targeted. Here's Vista, or McAfee, who considers themselves the Karnak the Magnificent of the antivirus world. Hackers will target Vista in 2008, McAfee predicts. Microsoft Corporation will be facing more than 40 vulnerabilities in Vista next year as the operating system climbs past the 10% market share milestone, and malware authors really start to find the flaws, according to a McAfee Inc. analyst. Most of the current malware has ignored Vista, said Craig Schumacher. Schmooger?
That's because most of the users have ignored Vista, too.
Right. Craig, he's a threat researcher at McAfee's Avert Lab, but that's not because the operating system has been frustratingly secure. And in fact, Schmugar argued Vista's gotten off easily its first year because hackers don't think it's a worthwhile target. These people are making their living writing malware or attacking users. They're driven by financial motivation, and only when market share has an impact will they really work on Vista. So the good news is there aren't a lot of viruses targeting Vista. The bad news for Microsoft is because nobody's buying it. So there you have that. It's the same thing that Mac OS X users relied on. There just aren't that many of them out there, so people aren't targeting them, but now they are. So I guess that's both good news and bad news. Our next caller is Mike from Penfield. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Well, I usually run Mozilla Firefox. When I click on a bookmark or try to go to a web address, I often get the server not found window. I try it again, I get the server not found window. I might refresh the page. I could go through this 6-7 times. Eventually, it usually finds the page. It happens both in Mozilla Firefox and Internet Explorer. When running Windows XP Pro, and I've got 3 computers behind the router, and it only happens on my main computer.
You're running Norton?
No, I'm not. I use AVG. I use the Microsoft Firewall.
Wait, turn out, why are you using, if you're behind a firewall, you don't need the Microsoft one?
Okay, my router is...
Microsoft firewall is about as handy as a screen door in a submarine.
Okay, all right. I will do that then.
What it sounds like is that one of your machines is not correctly... It sounds like it's got multiple DNS servers listed. When you type in an address like soundbites.org, the internet doesn't understand soundbites.org.
Right.
Okay, so what has to happen is the system translates soundbites.org into a number, in this case 129.21.31.88, and it goes there. That's done by a domain name server, and you may have multiple ones listed in your system. If that particular machine has some bogus ones listed, either because of a small glitch when it logged in or whatever reason, you would get a lot of problems before you actually got a real answer.
Well, let me tell you what I've done in regards to that. In Mozilla Firefox and both Internet Explorer, I've gone to the options and I've cleared the cache.
Yeah, see, none of that is going to help. It's built into Windows itself. It's built into the Ethernet stack that loads and lets you connect to the internet.
So flushing the DNS doesn't help either?
If you flush the DNS, that should help, assuming that there's nothing in the setup of your internet setup, your Ethernet setup, your network setup, where you by hand put in some DNS numbers.
Okay, so I have flushed the DNS.
Well, but if you had ever put in by hand, some DNS numbers, flushing the DNS will only flush the ones that are added automatically, not the ones you put in by hand.
That's only the DNS entries. That's not the DNS IPs themselves.
Right. So what you want to do is go into network and check the setup. Make sure it says get your information through DHCP, not you put it in by hand.
And I see that quite frequently in many browsers, even on the Mac, and I just attribute it to the internet is full, go home.
Sometimes
it
is.
Wait a minute, click it again.
But if it only happens in 1 out of 3 machines, it's likely the machine, not the network. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And 56 minutes after... Don't give me that, hey, it's your turn. I'm waiting for some sort of Christmas meltdown to happen in your head.
I think that's already happened.
All of a sudden, he's looking at me going, oh, you're supposed to talk now. Yeah, all right. All right, kiddies. It's that time again. Go grab your asbestos jammies, your face masks, and your riot shields, because it's once again time for Ranting Hour, Story Hour, with Uncle Dave.
You started
this one. Hang
on,
kiddies. Here we go.
All right. I'm going to continue right on with what I was doing last week.
No.
Oh, yeah. right, you know, last week, like I was telling you, these folks sit there and say, oh, my laptop, oh, it's my baby, and I got to worry about, you know, keeping it going and everything else, and they abuse the hell out of it. Well, in that same vein, you know, it's like, don't shoot the messenger, folks, because, you know, if you don't take the time to unplug your laptop properly, and you yank that little connector that's supposed to power it up out, and then come to me and say, oh, this should be an easy fix, shouldn't it? Yeah. After we, spend like 3 hours breaking it down, and then another 3 hours to put it back together.
Unsoldering and resoldering.
Well, this is the thing. What folks don't realize is you literally have to, in a laptop, break it down to the day it was built. That means unhooking the keyboard, everything hooked up to it has to come out. Because
and with a lot of them, it's not an easy pull apart. You've got to use those safe pry things and
gently pry.
Gently pry. Nice term.
We literally have a sheet of paper that we set out. And like Steve uses little bins in it, but we mark it up and have to. Oh, you think I got to pay attention to him? The heck
with
that.
Well, you better. We're actually, done. Are we actually
now,
done?
Some of the Macs, that's the DC in board, and it's a separate board that's a lot easier to replace.
On most laptops and the PC world, forget it. You've got to break that whole thing down. So if I tell you it's going to take a number of hours, don't complain to me, and then, because that's what it is.
Well, then go buy a new Mac laptop that has a magnetic power cord on it.
Do I have to put both of you out for...
Yeah.
Okay.
You started it.
When are the PCs going to catch up with the magnetic power attach? So
all right, here we go. We're done for another week.
From China.
We're putting Uncle Dave and Uncle Steve back in the box, the lead-lined box. Until next week.
Next week.
Oh, dang, we didn't poke any holes in those boxes. Oh, well, we're back. We're going to take a long and much-needed break now. We'll be back on the other side. We're going to be bringing you the news, the weather, the sports, all the stuff you really listen to Wham for. On the other side of that, we've got people patiently waiting on the lines, and we will get to all of them. We'll get to our poll of the week. We'll talk a little bit about last week's poll. Don't forget to join us in the chat on efnet.org, chat.efnet.org.
I think it's
yes,
full.
Yes, Francis is now Francis with a Y. What?
I think it's full.
Very funny. How can it be full? It's IRC. We're going to be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, I don't know what happened to him, Rob Linton.
Yeah, is that really him, or are we done the DNA test?
He's awake for the first time in months. Me, Nick Francesco, and all of you, it's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Now, as you know, every week we do a poll. Last week's poll, thank you. Last week's poll, what was Vista's biggest problem? Agreeing with the news article I read, 40% of you said XP, 37% of you said application compatibility, 9% of you said the Linux, 9% of you, one vote less, actually said the Mac, and 15 of you said price. That's 294 of you voted.
The problem was we could only pick one.
Well, exactly. Tying for 178th in the all-time hit list. This week's poll is about an interesting story. According to the Wall Street Journal, the great and mighty Omni-Universal Empire, also known as Google, is planning to give free online disk storage beyond the gigabytes they already allocate for Gmail, Picasa, or Google Apps. This space will be able to hold any kind of file, although it's not clear how it would be integrated with your desktop, if at all. The storage service, which hasn't been officially confirmed yet, brings up loads of questions and concerns. Would it work like AOL's xDrive or Apple iDisk, fully integrated with your computer? It looks actually Gmail, the Gmail storage space, the storage space on Gmail. Somebody wrote a pseudo file system for Linux, so I can actually open a Gmail drive and drag and drop files, so it's pretty cool. In the background, of course, it does all the mailing and retrieving, but it works. Would it be fully integrated with the desktop? It looks like the more user-friendly option, so we can assume it will be. Would Google analyze the data stored in their servers for advertising purposes? Will they be providing it with search on your stored documents, which most probably means they'll be able to give you ads while you search results? Does this raise privacy concerns? According to the Wall Street Journal, Kevin Bankston, staff attorney at Electronic Frontier Foundation, thinks you will be less protected, although this is the same issue we now face with Google Apps, Gmail, and plenty of other online services, so there's really no news there. Google said that we have extensive safeguards in place currently to protect our user data, and we have a very strong track record in this regard, which means, like always, we'll just have to wait and see. So this week's poll says, would you have privacy concerns about Google storing your documents? Choices are heck yes. With Google, never. Not with proper precautions. I try not to think about those things, and I'm not entirely clear on the concept. So far, we have about 75 votes, 81 votes. Winning is by a large margin is heck yes, 74% of the votes, followed by not with proper precautions. I'm not entirely clear on the concept is next. With Google, never, and I try not to think about those things has one vote. I actually added the I'm not entirely clear on the concept because of the next section. Once you're done with your vote, if you look at the yellow box underneath, you will see a link that says give us your opinion. Click on that link. It takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can't say that either. Beg your pardon. And it will take you to my website at asknick.com where you can enter an entire opinion up to 255 characters. While you're there, check it out. I put out a newsletter 3 times a week, and I am back to 3 times a week. I was sick for a while, and a couple of other things happened, but now I'm back to 3 times a week.
That could be Monday, Monday, and Monday, right?
It could be. It's 3 a week. They could all come out on the same day. But they generally don't. There's a search option. You can search the old newsletters, and there's rants and raves, tips and tricks, questions and answers, grins and giggles, whatever I got in there. I don't even know I got in there. And then, of course, don't forget to hit the shop. If you think of buying a Kindle, there's a link on my site. And then come on back to the Soundbites website and enjoy all the insanity that goes on there on a far too regular basis. So please vote in the poll. Don't forget, join us on the Soundbites chat room at chat.efnet.org. Enter #Soundbites for the channel and then whatever you want for your username. I will try to remember to put that up as the link. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Yes, sir. I was told that your computer could run more efficiently if you turn off the non-essential programs running in the background. And my question is, how do you get a list of what's running in the background, and how do you know what is non-essential?
Those are two very different questions.
Depends.
The first answer is easy. Control-Alt-Delete will list all of the processes running.
It brings up the task manager.
All the processes. On the Macintosh, there's a program called Activity Monitor that does the same thing, shows you all the processes. You have to know what's useful and not.
Like if you've got the HP sitting there constantly monitoring to see if you're going to print something, or the Kodak Easy Share software, which is another memory hog that it's constantly saying, you got anything for me?
Right.
You know, those things, you just got to experiment by turning them off one at a time.
There is a list of what runs, what's in the task. That's called the task list.
Yep.
There is a list of what runs in the task list, and I'll have Steve put that up.
If you don't recognize one of the process names, you can usually Google it and see what it means.
Right.
Like one of the big ones is Outlook Express. The actual process name is MSIMN, Microsoft Internet Mail and News.
Right.
I see all those letters and things, and I don't know what hardly half of them mean.
Well, like I said, the reality is most of them you better not shut down.
Yeah.
But if you want to at least look at what they are, the place to go is answersthatwork.com.
Answers that work.
Wait, hold on. Steve's going to put this in the thing. It's answersthatwork.com/task list_pages, and that's a capital T on task list, /task list.htm, and it's all lowercase. But Steve will put that up in the forums in just a couple of minutes, and you'll be able to just click on the link.
Okay, but Kodak EtherShare is one of the things I can get rid of.
Sure, you can. Any software that you added, you can stop from running.
Well, and most of those types of programs, like EasyShare and the HP Print Monitor, they sit in the background waiting for you. In the case of Kodak, to plug in your camera, or in the case of the printer driver,
to use it.
Well, for the printer to talk to the computer to say I'm out of ink or I'm out of paper or something like that,
or I need to make a copy.
And,
or
right. So, and if you don't care that your computer doesn't know that. And whenever you want to print something, you just print it. And whenever you want to bring in your camera, you launch EasyShare yourself. You know, those background tasks you can easily quit. And most of those should have something in the taskbar in the bottom right corner.
Well, usually in MS Config, you can go in there and in the startup, uncheck those one at a time to disable those services from loading. That's the safest place.
Right. All right. Our next caller.
Thank you.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. Rose, you're still there. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
I got a real problem. I'm frustrated. My computer, I had two of them on a network, and I went in and I set up another user account in there that was a remote desktop. And now it comes up, it starts to give you that little preamble that you get when you log on in, I think they call it classic mode.
Yeah.
And now it won't let me log on. Both of them did the same thing. The other one, I was able to do the F8 and get into safe mode and use the go back.
Yep.
Everything on there. Okay, take, the restore, right. System restore.
Yep.
Well, my other computer has another product on there, Take You Back or whatever, one from, I think it's Norton that makes it.
Yeah, the Go Back by Norton.
Yeah, and I did it, and I took it back to a date before this happened, and it still doesn't work, okay? And I got on there, the only way I could get in was putting the install disk in and limping in there under DOS mode, and I went into where I believe the restore lives, and the last thing in there, like in computer terms, is from the Mesozoic era. It's like, 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I can't get in. And I don't know if it's because something was set to like zero tries. I think one of the things that had been set in there was for like zero retries, but I thought that meant disable. Maybe I was wrong on that. But I don't know. What's probably a deep problem. It just,
How many users do you have on that machine?
There's only one comes up in the,
No, that wasn't what I asked. I said, how many users do you have on that machine? Not how many come up.
There's probably five or six.
And which one comes up?
Mine.
And you can't log in as yourself?
Nope. I put my password in, the one that incidentally worked when I gained access to the disk, mm-hmm. under DOS, or what I call DOS. It comes back and says, do you want your hint?
What OS is this?
This is Windows XP Pro.
All right, and can you get in safe mode under the administrator?
No, that doesn't even come up. And I kind of was attributing that to the go back.
You keep hitting F8 when it's booting and you don't get the choice of safe mode?
I get it, okay, and it starts to go into it, but then it comes back and boots up in the regular mode.
Yeah, but when you're going to trying to
well, that's a deeper problem then. If you're booting in the safe mode, it reboots itself into full mode. You've got a much deeper problem in the computer with Windows being corrupted.
Okay, because it comes up like it's going to do that, but then it goes on and comes back to that little startup window and goes on. It offers you the options. It comes up and says, like safe mode.
You might have to do an install of Windows over Windows.
And that's what I was afraid of. Then you lose all your data, right?
No. No,
don't erase the computer. Just install Windows over Windows.
Yeah, you're just, in other words, when you put the CD in, it'll, and you have it boot from the CD, the first screen you're going to see is saying to it, tell it to install, and then you'll do an F8. After you do the F8, at the bottom of the screen, you will see the option to repair. You set select the repair at that point, not the first time you see it.
Okay, when I do that, though, it wants me to put a floppy in the A drive, and I don't have one.
No, you shouldn't need a floppy in the A drive.
How old of a computer is it? Can it boot the Windows CD?
Yeah, that I was able to do that. I mean,
because normally after you, what it does is it'll check, just, you know, on the repair, not the install. The repair on the after you hit the F8 will just reinstall Windows over Windows, and it won't ask for anything in the floppy drive.
Okay. What you need to do here is you go to soundbites.org.
Okay.
Click on the links button. The ninth link is Dave's tips. Scroll right near the bottom of that page from 2003-07-25 is installing Windows XP over Windows XP.
Okay.
It's like the
step-by-step procedure.
Okay.
10th or 12th or 15th one from the bottom.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Excellent. Thanks. Where do you get this music?
This isn't my choice, trust me.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob, I Just Sit Here, Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
All right, you chipmunks, ready to sing your song?
I'll say we are. Yeah, let's sing it now.
Okay, Simon?
Okay.
Okay, Theodore?
Okay.
Okay, Alvin? Alvin.
Alvin!
Okay! Christmas, Christmas time is here.
How about they're coming out with a brand new Chipmunks movie? Did you see that?
Live action movie.
Live action.
Oh, it's great.
Well,
I can't wait.
With animated chipmunks, yeah.
Well, but
is
still,
it
looks hilarious.
Is it going to be Dave Mysterian or is he passed?
He's long gone.
That's what I thought. So it's going to be somebody else.
No,
yeah, they got some other clown doing it, but you know he won't be as good as the original, I'm sure.
It's not Ben Brendan Fraser. Anything is Brendan Fraser. We know that.
No,
all right, we are...
Jason Lee.
Jason Lee? All right, we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, I'm so confused. Well, here it is. You know how they say on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog? Well, they're teaching dogs to use computers in Austria. Where else? Four dogs strutted their stuff recently using touchscreen computers to classify color photographs for a study of animal cognition. Using touchscreen computers with dogs opens up a whole world of possibility on how to test the cognitive abilities of dogs by basically completely controlling any influence from the owner or experimenter. Until now, methods relied on the dog's owner or an experimenter to cue the animal, which is a variable that could influence the results. They trained the computers, the dogs, four different dogs. They were shown landscape and dog photos, and they had to select which ones were the dog photos. And when they touched the screen with their nose, when it was showing a dog, they got a treat. Then they changed it, and they showed all landscape pictures, some of which had dogs in them. And the dogs were right 100% of the time. It's pretty astonishing. We have people in our forums who can't do... No, not at all. So the results indicate the dogs were able to form the concept of dog, whether they recognize the pup pictures as actual dogs, however, of course, is completely unknown. But I will say that... who cares? Our next caller...
There was a similar study about... They were trying to test the why blondes have more fun... phrase, and they showed a bunch of men pictures of women, blondes, redheads, brunettes, whatever, and then asked them questions, testing their mental faculties. And after seeing pictures of blondes, men were dumber.
You can send your complaint letters too. Yeah. Attention, so Steve Ray.
Well, it's not the fact that blondes have more fun. It's just men with blonde women are stupid.
1180 WHAM in Rochester.
Steve Ray. The opinions of Steve Ray are not those of any right-thinking human in the known universe. Thank you. Our next caller, let's get Steve. Many of us have this little thing in the back of our heads called a sensor. that usually kicks in before we say things like that.
Here it is. It was on NPR.
I don't really care.
I found it on NPR, so it's true.
You have no idea how empathetic I am toward where you found it. Our next caller is Marianne from Irondequoit. Marianne, please forgive us and go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question on that offer that they were giving on November 12th. Was buy a laptop for $399 and then they would give one to a child.
Sure.
And my question is, I wondered if you had a chance to investigate it and what you might have thought of it. And
I went for it.
You did? Okay, you said you were going to.
And it's still going on. It's extended through December 31st. It's at laptopgiving.org. The basic idea is this. There's a thing that they're doing. Nicholas Negroponte of MIT is doing a thing called One Laptop Per Child, OLPC. And they've developed a laptop that was supposed to cost $100 and now costs like $190. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to seed them out to billions of kids. They're sending 100,000 of them to somewhere in South America. That country has bought them and a bunch of other places.
That was Peru.
There you go. And they have a bunch of smaller requests, and there's just millions of them out there. Intel is angry because the chip in there is an AMD. Microsoft has tried to block them because it uses Linux, not Windows, blah, 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 blah. But the point is this. They're now saying, people all over the world have said, I want one. I'm not in a developing country, but I want one just because they're so cool. And now they have this deal. If you go to laptopgiving.org, you buy two.
Uh-huh.
You get one, and the other one goes to a deserving child, and you can take the $200 off of your taxes as a charitable donation, not the full $398 or whatever it is. Right. But you get $200 of that as a donation.
Okay. And what do you think of the computer itself as far as programs that'll run on it?
It's semi-limited, but the point is not to use it as your only computer. The point is to do this very cool thing with it.
Yeah, trying to fit a need where, kids don't have computers, period.
Right. I have played a little bit with a beta copy of the software that comes from it.
Uh-huh.
It's capable, but a little bit limited. You can do writing, you can do web browsing, and there's some games designed specifically for kids.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty neat toy. Every kid who's played with this software, again, I only have a beta copy that I put on an old laptop, but every kid I showed it to loved it, just had the best time with it.
Uh-huh.
But for an adult, I don't know if it's the right thing. If you're an adult and you're looking for an inexpensive machine, there's the GPC, which is available from Walmart, as a matter of fact, for $200, but it doesn't have a monitor and it's a desktop.
Uh-huh.
Well, then there's the EEPC laptop.
And then there's the EEPC from Asus, but I haven't played with that. I know nothing about it as such. But there's a lot of other things that are available. But I think the deal with this one laptop per child is just so good to get laptops in the hands of kids in the third world who would not have that ability to get a computer, that I think it's a very worthwhile thing, and that's why I gave to it.
Right. Is it possible to get a Windows operating system on them?
Not that one, no.
No, okay. All right.
That's why Microsoft is blocking it. They're coming out with another version that will have that. And then there's the Classmate, which is from Intel, which is very similar, but because it's from Intel and it runs Windows, it's more expensive.
Uh-huh.
Even though they're selling it under their cost to build just to get you not buy the OLPC.
Are they also offering to give one to...
No, absolutely not.
Pardon me?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
No, they're not in it for charity. They're in it for money.
Right. Okay. Well, I was curious about the Windows being on there also because it's such a popular operating system. Going to an underdeveloped country, I thought that would be a great idea.
Well, it's only popular because there's so many of them. It's a catch-22. Well, no, it's a catch-22. I see. Now, let me explain.
Yeah.
I know what you meant, but it just came out wrong.
Yeah. Most people buy Windows because most people have Windows.
Right.
There are many better alternatives that don't have a lot of the problems Windows have, but it's sort of become the default standard. over the years because people buy Windows so they can steal software from their friends, basically, right. is how it started.
One of the things with Windows is you only get a limited set of applications with the system. Everything else you have to buy or install, and if you install it yourself, it's going to be, you're going to have to pay for that software or update everything individually. With the Linux operating system, the way it is set there and the way it is with my laptop, for example, I've got 12 applications waiting to be updated. I just get a little notice this morning, 12 are updatable. Some are for the operating system, one's for the word processor, one's for a couple of games I've got on here. All of that stuff is free. All of it updates automatically. I don't have to go to 15 different places to update everything. And that makes it much easier, particularly for kids in third world countries who don't have some of the resources we have where they can call somebody or take it to somebody or whatever.
That's true. Okay, well, thanks very much. Appreciate the information on it.
Thank you very much.
It was a really interesting Joy of Tech cartoon a week or so ago about this, showing a happy African village and, you know, children playing, and then Negroponte saying, "Oh, what deplorable conditions," and passing out PCs, the OL PCs. And then a year later, you know, the kids are jonesing for an upgrade. Well, how am I supposed to watch YouTube with this lousy bandwidth? You know, click on it, you newbie.
Yeah, right, right, right. All right, our next caller is Kent from Webster, New York. Welcome, Kent. What's your question? Kent?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Looking at replacing my existing home computer, running Windows XP currently, and it kind of ties into the last question. Do I go with a new computer with Windows XP or a Vista Home or a Vista Premier or go to Linux? And this is the one that my wife uses also.
That's a lovely question. And we got one, two, three, four people on the panel. That's at least five answers.
Yeah.
Right now, XP is a much better choice than Vista.
You're going to pay more for Vista.
Well, it runs at least 10% slower.
The reason for that XP being better than Vista is, do you want to use any of your existing peripherals?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Then XP is better than Vista.
Yeah.
If you want to buy all new peripherals.
No. Well, the other thing, though,
yeah.
The key thing, though, that you hit on, though, is you said your wife is going to be using it?
Correct.
Guess who's going to be the sounding board if something doesn't work right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like I'm a full-time help.
It's going to be, honey, this isn't working. It worked on the old machine. Why isn't it working here?
Right. Exactly.
So what we always say, you know, no matter whether you love Linux or the Mac or Windows or XP, Vista, I don't care. The reality is this. Who's going to be the support person for that machine?
Yeah, it's going to be me.
And which operating system do you know best?
XP.
That's what you put on it, then. It gets to be that simple.
Yeah.
Then how do I find a computer with XP? Virtually every computer, unless I get something built locally, or I think maybe...
And what's wrong
with
that?
That's how you do it. Yeah, you get it built locally, and we can put XP on it.
And honestly...
I have no problem with that.
Yeah, that's the way you do it, and honestly, we're always, always pushing... Buy local. Yeah. Well, these two guys actually are local vendors, so but I'm not, and I tell you that you should always buy locally. A, it keeps your money in the local economy. B, it keeps the local economy healthy. And C, you've got a face to look at if you've got a problem.
Yeah, and any of the local folks, you're not going to be dialing an 800 number and talking overseas.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And someone right down the street.
Yep, there you go.
Okay. Well, I think you've helped with that decision, gentlemen. Thank you.
That's what we're here for.
Thank you.
Helping you spend your money. Our next caller is Tom from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I have a year-and-a-half-old desktop. It's running XP Home. I have DSL through a local telephone company. And that narrows it down, right? And when I go to log on and then using the Internet Explorer with Frontier's the homepage, it stops or runs extremely slow. It'll start to load the page, and if I can see the top of it where the other websites that it's visited and hit that little arrow and click on one of the other websites, it'll load that site immediately. But it'll stall and not load the homepage.
The Frontier homepage uses some... Well, first, you can change your homepage to anything you want.
And it also depends on which Frontier homepage it is. If it's Frontier's own homepage, or... And that could be part of the problem, too. It may be, if you had it set to frontiernet.net, it redirects you to the MyWay portal service they're using. My way is loading a bunch of advertisements. It could be one of those ads hanging up trying to get displayed.
In addition,
okay, well, I've got the ad stuff turned right up tight, so I don't.
Well, that may be your problem. It's stalling out there because it's trying to load an ad,
and it's blocking it with the computer.
Right. Yeah. Right. The other thing you might try is downloading Firefox.
Okay.
And see if that works for you. If it does, you know the problem is in IE. If it doesn't, you know the problem is somewhere else. And I would have to suggest it's either going to be you don't have Flash loaded or you don't have something else loaded that's required to view that homepage, particularly if it's the My Way page, uses a lot of Flash.
Yeah, it comes up on My Way.
Yeah, or there is, like Steve said, there's a problem with one of the vendors, one of the ads on that page having a problem.
Sometimes if you turn on your status bar at the bottom of the window where it tells you what pages it's loading, you can see something like waiting for ad.doubleclick.net.
Which means, I hate DoubleClick.
Right, and that's that's one of the leading advertising sources. So if they're having a problem with their ad server getting the ad to the page, the ad can stall. And now, this is my intention too, isn't it? The ads load first and then the page loads?
Right.
Yeah.
What I have done, and you may want to do the same if you're savvy enough to really know what you're doing here, on my Linux boxes and on my Windows boxes, I go into the host file and I set DoubleClick.net to go to 127.0.0.1. That's my machine. So it takes about a tenth of a second to come back and say, I'm sorry, I can't find that ad, and move on.
And then it moves on.
And then I never see any of the DoubleClick ads.
All right. So if I got my spyware and all that stuff turned right up tight, that's a good possibility of that's what's stalling the
page
from loading.
It's not stopping it. If you waited long enough, it would load. But it's got to time out to all those places.
Yeah, it does.
Each one individually.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try the Firefox one and see.
Try that, and that'll tell you where the problem lies. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Lint, and me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
You gotta love the Jackson 5.
You gotta love all five of them, individually and simultaneously. You gotta watch Rob on the webcam because he is just bouncing around in his seat, cackling like a 4-year-old in Christmas morning.
No, I don't think they can see me either. I make sure I hide.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't, you know, it's weird.
It's an expensive camera. You don't want to break it right off.
Oh.
I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I quit.
Yeah, 45. Yeah. Oh, I mean,
like hotel, it's Hotel California.
45 minutes after the hour, it's sound bites. Be very, very quiet. We're hunting Wintons. Our next caller is Claude from Greece, New York. Welcome, Claude. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I got a quick question. I bought a new machine and I opened the letter box. It wasn't one in there. It got 86 process running. Just out of the box. Anyway, I used Wind Patrol with a little dog named Scotty and was able to see all the running process. And so I was able to close down like 40 of them. Anyway, my question is, I went into my device manager and in my networking, it's giving me something called Microsoft 64 adapter with an exclamation mark. And I have no idea what that is.
Microsoft 64 adapter?
Yeah, 6-4. That's 6-4 adapter.
6-4. Oh.
Yeah, I did a Google search. There's a ton of people who had the same problem. Nobody had a solution.
Well, 6-4 is a FireWire cable. FireWire 6-pin to 4-pin. That's probably not it.
Well, just give me an exclamation mark. I did an update of the driver. It says there's no newer driver, but the exclamation mark is still there, so I don't know.
I just found something in the Microsoft TechNet about it.
Okay. All right. My other thing is my old machine, I take off the CPU fan to clean it, and now the connection is loose, so the fan won't work. Is there some way I could, like, make it not loose?
Loose in the actual clamps or loose to the processor?
Loose the connection that connects back to the motherboard.
Yeah, because typically after you remove the heatsink, you have to replace the thermal paste that connects the heatsink to the processor.
Yeah, but that's not what his problem is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But the fan is still turning, though, that's blowing on the CPU?
Well, the fan turns when I hold the connection together.
And it's not turning, though, otherwise?
You mean the physical wire connecting to the fan or the fan itself?
No, the connector that goes to the motherboard, right at the connection, if I pull the connector loose.
Yeah. Because you don't want to run that computer too long without that fan running on the CPU because it will overheat the board and burn out the board.
Yeah.
Right, definitely.
A lot of those connectors have a little, what do you call it, a J-clip or something, that you have to spread while you're pulling the plug off the socket.
Okay.
And you can inadvertently pull the socket loose from the motherboard if you pull on that cable wrong.
Yeah, and if you happen to, you might have to get another connector and splice it in to re...
Yeah, it depends if it's the connector on the fan or the connector on the logic board.
Yeah.
It, on the fan, you can easily replace. On the logic board, you can't.
Not yet.
Right, that's my thing. I'm not sure if the one to the fan or the one to the logic board, so... Where can I bring it to, find out?
Bring it on in. We can take a look at it.
And
tell them who you are and tell them where you are.
Yeah, it's NIPC. We're at 70 Empire Boulevard, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Oh, okay. All right, that helps.
All righty.
Thank you, Claude.
Yep. Bye.
I've also seen cases, and it really annoys me when I do it, where you pull the wire out of the socket.
Yeah.
It's another one of those gently pries.
Right.
And it's always the iBook model, and it's the power button socket.
Yeah.
If you pull it, you got to pull hard enough to get the socket off the motherboard, but then you'll pull the wires out of the socket.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 49 minutes after the hour, and you are indeed listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Our next caller is Keith from Farmington, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
Gentlemen, amusing anecdote and a comment. The amusing anecdote is I switched over to Gmail, and I run a football pool where everybody sends me their pick each week in the subject line. And it's funny, when I open it up, how the Gmail tries to match up advertisers what's written in the subject line, like when they're picking teams and cities. It's just kind of funny.
It also scans the body of the message and will direct advertising based on what you type in your message. And a lot of people don't realize that unless you read the fine print.
There's nothing ever in the message, because it's easier just to see the subject mail than without having...
Right. That's very funny.
But on this, buy a computer, give a computer to a third world country kid or something. You know, I got a problem with the third world issue. They're third world because they don't have enough food, they don't have fresh water, they don't have clothing, they have too many children, no population, no disease control, and the list goes on and on. They're not third world kids because they don't have a laptop.
But here's the deal.
And that's what a lot of the commentators have been talking about. Throwing a computer at them isn't going to help their bigger problems.
What are they supposed to do? Go online just to see how awful their life is? Or are they going to be the generators of the next Sudanese relative who died and left millions of dollars?
There's two things at work here, Keith. First, not everybody... All right, let me put it this way. There are already lots of agencies and organizations that are bringing them food and shelter and other types of aid.
Right.
What the folks at MIT wanted to do was take that next step for them. Once they've got the food and the aid and the water, they're still not educated in raising themselves up out of the poverty they have. And this is one way to do it, by giving them access, not to computers so that they can do email and surf the net, but computers so that we can download books for them, so that we can download manuals on how to build tractors and things like that. That's the stuff that they plan to use it for. So this is not the let's get them kept alive part. This is the next step. We've got them healed and we've got them alive. There are lots of places where now what do we do? Do we just abandon them? No, we take the next step and we teach them how to be self-sufficient and how to join the world community to get the help they need.
It's but, teaching them to fish after we've also given them the fish.
Right.
Right. You've given them the fish, but they still can't sustain themselves.
That's well, this the is what this is part of what this is about. It now teaches them how to sustain themselves.
Well,
it lets them ask for help. It lets them figure out what they need. It lets them get training and learning on what they could use.
And where was that? Where was that last genocidal dictator takeover in the last couple of weeks?
Oh yeah, somebody did.
And because a lot of the people had laptops, news got out that this horrible thing was happening.
Yep.
Well, I'm sure their intention is, but I would rather see third world nations have a constant supply of clean water so they don't get this waterborne diseases. And they don't. And giving them laptops to say, oh, this is how you do it. We've been sending Peace Corps people over there for decades, and they still can't sustain clean water, adequate food.
Well, I have to argue with you there. There are a lot of places that the Peace Corps went in the 60s that are very self-sustaining now, and it's a matter of being trained. This Peace Corps we have today is not quite the same Peace Corps we had back then. It's very good, but it's not quite the same. And it takes years for it to work. It's not a 5-minute thing. It's not a 15-minute thing. It's a multi-decade thing. And the places where the Peace Corps first went out are, in fact, self-sustaining and are, in fact, becoming members of the world community and able to contribute and to participate.
It's a matter of education, and I myself have worked with a lot of third world people in third world countries, and the education is desperately needed. This is just a tool to see that that happens.
Exactly. All right, we got to take off. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to all of those to whom we did not get. Next week, call in earlier and more often. I want to thank everybody in the FNET IRC chat. And we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich, who has donated his time, his talent, and his abilities to do the podcast every week.
Always happy to.
Rob Linton, who is Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. After what? At 58 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. We will see you next week, same bad time, same bad channel, on 1180 WHAM.